Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 288, recorded on February 20th, 2016. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I am Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm panicking, though, because I just realized my pick is an iPhone pick, and I don't have my iPhone in this room with me. So I'm going to have to kind of...
Just have your cat bring it to you.
Screenshots.
Just your
Sometimes
cat
I like
can do
to
that,
go
right?
through the app when I'm making my pick, just so I sound like I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel you. Jeff Gamet's also here from the Mech Absorber. Hey, Jeff, how you doing? I think, didn't someone buy that domain finally?
Probably.
Or maybe I dreamt
somebody,
it.
Not us.
It was, yeah. I might have dreamt that.
Yeah, well, I have not bought it yet. And I'm okay with that. I'm not losing sleep over it.
I am, apparently.
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah, so what's going on this week? Do we want to... I sent you guys the topic list. How do you want to attack this? You want to attack the bottom first or the top first? Do we want to talk about Kanye?
God, no. Is that the bottom of the list?
That's the bottom of the list.
We probably should do that
first. That's so appropriate.
Yeah, I thought so.
I don't know anything about that other than crazy, crazy.
Yeah, let's talk about Kanye. So, just to warm up. So he's got a new album out called The Life of Pablo. And mm-hmm. And I like the quote, my album will never, never, never be on Apple, and it will never be for sale. You can only get it on Tidal. Which I truly...
Does anybody care?
I truly, truly believed that Tidal went away like a month after it was a thing.
Yeah.
I really thought it didn't exist anymore.
Well, and Kanye's wrong, because the only place that you can get it is not Tidal. Well, I mean, oh, wait, you can get it on Tidal, but that's not the exclusive place.
Okay.
Because the pirate...
Because we have the internet.
Yeah, the Pirate Bay, yeah.
And it's a digital file.
Yeah, they went to town and made sure that anyone that wants to get his album without going through Tidal can do so. But still, I mean, I think the reason he is doing this is primarily to try and boost Tidal, which is, or at least appears to be in a death spiral.
I mean, it did boost it.
No, it did not.
I mean,
it boosted downloads of the iOS app,
right.
But it did not increase subscriptions.
Okay, so I went to Tidal, and I was able to make it start playing this album, and it, and then it said, "Hey, do you want some? Do you want to give us some money?" And I just clicked the little X, and I continued listening to the album. So, am I missing something? I didn't have to sign up for anything.
The part you're missing is where Kanye thinks Tidal has any hope of survival.
Yeah. You're actually, I think, proving Jeff's point. So a bunch of people downloaded the app so they could listen to the album, but that doesn't mean they're getting more subscribers.
Yeah.
Right.
So how does the thing work? Do you have to have a subscription to listen? Is it like a certain number? Is it a certain time? Like, what's the deal? Do we know what's going on with Tidal? How does it work?
It's kind of messed up. And I stopped following it at one point because I was like, why am I wasting my time with this? So when it launched for $20 a month, and that was the only thing you could do was pay them $20 a month, mm-hmm. you were getting supposedly higher quality audio files.
Wasn't there also a number of artists who claimed they were going to do exclusive on Tidal?
Yes, and as far as I know, the only person right now that's actually exclusive on Tidal is Kanye with this one album.
Well, good for him for actually doing it.
Well, he's the founder, right?
He's a principal investor, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So
Wasn't Madonna also on that team?
She was on that stage when they did that really weird launch event. You didn't even need to be stoned to be tripping while you watched that.
Wasn't Daft Punk there too?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that would definitely contribute to the Dead Mouse. Oh, yeah. And yeah. That's but all trip out.
They didn't need to be there. They did nothing that enhanced.
They just sat there, didn't they?
Yeah, they just sat there. It was just this weird thing. So, but yeah, the one thing for listeners that Tidal had that would set them apart, the potentially higher quality audio files, they did away with that and dropped the price to $10.
Hmm.
And they're just streaming the same quality audio files as everyone else.
So that's Tidal Premium, I guess.
Yeah.
Haven't they kind of been hit by infighting too? Like the artists who are behind it are kind of throwing stuff back and forth. And I mean, it seems like it's in implode mode.
It's totally imploding. And to answer your question, Adam, Kanye.
Yeah, but I mean, I think part of the idea was that it was going to be, I mean, one of the ways they were going to get people over there was through these exclusive deals, right? And they're just not happening for probably a lot of reasons behind the scenes.
Yeah, and I think it's because even though artists were, in theory, going to be able to make more money off of royalties.
That was the side for artists, right?
That was the side for artists.
Were going to pay more for the streaming.
Yeah, the reality is there's no traffic there. They're not making money. So
yeah,
that's not a good business move, making your album exclusive on Tidal.
So was it a situation where the artist, it was direct from the artist sort of thing? Is that why they were going to be making more money?
Yeah.
I think that was the idea, but I don't know that there's any clear indication that there were any, like, deals in place. I mean, most of those artists are still signed with labels. So how they can't even work around those contracts, right?
Right. Yeah.
So it looks like
I was never clear at how it was going to work.
I don't think they were clear how it was going to work.
That's, yeah, again, I think one of the issues. I don't know much about this, though. I shouldn't be talking too much because I haven't really been following it, to be honest.
It's okay. So, Adam, the short version.
I threw it off as a non-starter.
And you were right. So here's the short version. Hey, let's make this new streaming service. We'll call it Tidal. Swell, let's do that. And then a bunch of artists are like, hey, let's buy that new streaming service, Tidal. Okay, we'll do that. It'll be swell. There you go.
Yeah.
I should work for History Channel.
You'd probably be better than most of the fools on there.
Meanwhile, Apple Music has 11 million and growing paid subscribers, right?
Right.
Welcome to Tidal. Choose a subscription to blah, 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 blah. Oh, free trial. I see. Not now. So I said not now. And
it still lets you in and access.
And then not now. I pressed it again. Wait. Oh, okay. So I can't listen to the album until I start a free trial on the app. But I think on the website, I can just make it go. yeah, bringing you real information at the speed of us.
Well, and the irony is, had he put it out on Apple Music exclusively, it probably would not have made its way to the pirate places, right?
Well, I mean, it would have, but
I guess you could do the hijack the audio stream re-record.
Yeah, I don't think it would have been as rampant. If it had been on the iTunes store or Apple Music.
I guess, okay, so I don't know, maybe there was some kind of glitch out. You know what? I wonder if it was a situation where there were only five people on Tidal, right, before this happened. And so their stuff was kind of untested because I was streaming, no problem, that album, like the day this happened. And now
I can't replicate it.
And now I can't. Now it's just trying to get me to sign up
for free trial. So I mean, the earlier statement still stands. That Jeff made is all that has been evidenced is that there were a lot more downloads of the app because of this deal because of him doing it exclusive to Tidal. That could mm-hmm. be many people signing up for free trials, but that you have to wait to find out if it has any impact on their subscriptions, because if everybody's just signing up for free trials so they can listen to the album,
yeah,
then
that's not generating any revenue.
That's not generating any revenue, exactly.
Well,
except it comes back to, are they paying artists for streams under free trials? I mean, there's a lot of questions I'd want to ask, you know, like maybe they are because they were supposed to have a better deal for artists, but and Apple kind of got forced into that, you know, on their side because they weren't going to do it. And then they did because of the whole Taylor thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. If this is a video show, you'd see me sitting here just shaking my head.
Yeah. Okay. So Kanye.
Kanye. Good.
Yeah.
He needs some serious help, psychological help. Someone reach out and help him.
Are we just going to go through all of the people that do need that? Like, are we moving on to
it seems like they're
the other crazy dude now.
Let's see here. Okay, so there's the January 1st, 1970 bug.
Oh yeah.
So that was, you know, what's really
epic bug.
Yeah. Is it epoch?
Epic.
Epic. Yeah.
It's spelled epoch, but in the Unix community, it's pronounced epic.
Epic. Yeah. I think unless you're a Brit, and then I think it's still epoch.
Okay. So I was kind of upset by this because whenever something like this happened, well, just let me say why.
Okay.
I was about to explain it and you cut me off.
Sorry.
It's cool. My YouTube channel, YouTube knows I like Apple things. Mm-hmm. And whenever something like this happens, I always see the like Smosh like videos in my YouTube feed. Like, mm-hmm. look what Apple's doing. They're totally shafting all their customers with the bip 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 boo. And
oh, I hate when they do the bip 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 boo.
Yeah. And they have, you know, freaking emojis and whatever. But so the idea is, you know, look how stupid Apple is. If you change your date to the wrong date, it just bricks your phone. F them. But basically what's going on here is, so iOS is a Unix-based operating system. Mm-hmm. And time is represented in binary in seconds, counting upward from January 1st, 1970. And this is for all Unix operating systems. So if you go into your settings and you attempt to change the time to before that time, you will not be able to.
Correct.
But if you are, it seems, in the ballpark of around that time or at that time.
It's May and earlier.
May and earlier.
So before June 1st, 2000, or 1970.
Okay, so should I go into the Apple store and just brick some phones. God, I would be popular.
They have a fix out now.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, isn't there, I think...
There's a fix. Well, I think it's fascinating the way it works, because while the time itself will not allow you to go before that, it seems as though there's probably some kind of background process that uses the time and tries to probably back calculate by, you know, so many weeks or months or what have you, to do some sort of math. And what's probably going on is an underflow?
An underflow.
Yeah. So the idea being, and so is this only happening on 64-bit devices?
I don't even know. It's obscure. It's just a weird, obscure, strange bug that 99.99% of the entire world is not going to hit.
Yeah, you're not going to hit it, but it's something that, you know, your annoying little brother is probably going to do to you.
Well, yeah. Your friend's going to send you, hey, check out this thing. If you do this,
it like gives it magical powers.
Right. And then you're going to do it.
And then you're going to, yeah, you're screwed. But yeah, well, I think that I just want to say it's cool that the way the math works on this, because what happens is when you go, as you count up in binary, at some point when you get to all ones, what happens when you go to the next digit is it wraps around, mm-hmm. right? So you go back to 000. Now with a 64-bit device, you have 64 of these bits. And I think this was one of the University of Nottingham guys. They do a lot of these really cool videos on math and physics and blah, blah, blah. So what happens is when you do an underflow, it's kind of the opposite of that. So you're counting backwards until you get to all zeros. And then the next digit down is all ones. And that represents a number that is, for the years, it's like way beyond what they estimate the universe to get to, way longer, like 20 times longer than the universe is expected to last, kind of thing. So it makes the iPhone just poop its pants and just die.
It's out.
But so if you have a phone and your stupid little brother or whatever, set your phone to it and it's broken now, you just have to do an update because it's out. There's a fix. Right?
Yeah. Yes, there's a fix.
Yep. Prior to the fix coming out, the only other possible way I could fathom someone might have hit this bug is I have had games like... The Room 3 has maybe spoiler alert now, but there are games where sometimes you have to adjust the physical clock on your device to actually have something occur in the game.
Oh, interesting. That's cool. Well, I mean, it was always...
Some puzzle games. I think, what was the... Sword and Sorcery also had a similar... part of it, but generally you're just messing with the hour of the day, not
like the year, like
the actual year.
Well, it's been my understanding when I goof with the time on my Mac, for example, that's typically where I do that. If I do that, it upsets a lot of things because there are certificates. There's a lot of signing going on in modern applications, and those certificates freak out if it's way beyond the scope of what would be reasonable. And so stuff stops working.
I always just use the time, let it set its own time.
I mean, this is for like one-off sorts of situations, but
yeah, no, I mean, yeah. But I mean, that's just proving this, how obscure this would have to be because your best bet is just let the system do what it's supposed to do and set its own time and you're going to be fine.
Error 53 bug. We talked about, I think, two different episodes. The first episode we talked about it, I was like, yeah, Apple's totally protecting us. And then I decided, no, it's stupid that they do this.
And now?
Now we find out.
And then we find out it was stupid that they did. It was an accident. It was and that's funny because the title of the show when we first talked about it was, it's a feature, not a bug. And as it turns out, it's a bug, not a feature.
It's a bug.
Yeah. So it was put in there for factory testing to ensure that the Touch ID system was correctly talking to the secure enclave. And so the idea was before the phones went out, when you do this, the latest software update, it would say, hey, everything's working perfectly, or no, it's not error 53. And that made it into the master branch or whatever, and, came out to users and hosed us for a little while. Of course there's
about a software update this week. Now there was a little bit of confusion in the reporting, and I don't know if you guys know what the official answer is. Because it's still 9.2.1. Is that what we're on right now?
I believe
yes.
So.
It's still an update there. So what I had read and made sense to me was that this only needed to be applied if you had a phone that was already in error 53 mode, and then you could dock it to iTunes and install the update, and then it would basically bring your phone back so it wasn't bricked anymore.
And that's my understanding as well.
Yeah. I'm guessing it's a different build number.
Now,
right?
Some people are saying, some people are saying if you can get this different build number, even if you haven't been error 53'd, if you update your phone via iTunes. It's definitely not available as an over-the-air update. Like, you won't see it as an update. But if you restore your phone it's sounding like this is the version. This you'll get this new build.
I'm guessing that they've probably pushed this. This is what's currently available for 9.2.1, right? But so if you're on like 9.2, and then today you went to update over the air for to 9.2.1, I'm guessing that the fix you'll would also be version. Included in that, and that would be the most prudent thing for them to do, so you don't have to.
So the only reason I'm mentioning this is if you're planning on having your Touch ID serviced, and you haven't gotten the latest update, or even if you're on 9.2.1, you may want to like
back up and restore
first, right?
Yeah.
I guess, I mean, hopefully the repair center you take it to is smart enough to know that they need to install it, but
yeah,
you would think
you probably could save yourself some hassle. I need to get yourself first.
I need to do some more research. So I went to, there's an Apple authorized service provider next door to the Target in SLO here. And I asked, you know, like, hey, you guys are Apple authorized. Can you replace the home button on my phone? Because it's, you know, the one I have at home is broken or whatever. And they went back and checked. And the guy's like, yeah, we can't do that. But a place down the street can, called iMechanics. I'm sure it's just a regional thing? It's probably a regional thing. But yeah, I need to contact them and talk to them about that situation. Because, I mean, it seems like there is a true process. Certainly Apple has the process, right? And Apple themselves made it seem like there is a real process that authorized third parties also know about.
This pairing thing that we heard about.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And that still makes sense. I mean, going back to our early thing, yeah, we were wrong that this wasn't a feature, it was a bug, but it still does make sense that there is part of this procedure when you're replacing a Touch ID sensor that you do need to sort of rematch it up with the secure enclave. That would just make sense.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it makes sense. You don't want to have a situation where it's like a non sanctioned Touch ID where it does everything that Touch ID does, but it also like submits photos of your thumbprint to some guy.
Right.
So that's fixed. That's good. And of course there are all those lawsuits out there that I'm guessing are just gonna be dropped.
No, they're not going to be dropped. Welcome to America.
Yeah. We can still get some money. You were inconvenienced. Yeah. Oh, and the other thing, so I forgot to mention.
It may even help the case, to be honest.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How so?
I don't know if it will help or not. I mean, I guess Apple can say, well, it was just a mistake.
Well, they have, so let's see here. Alongside the new version, Apple has also published a support document outlining how customers can resolve the Error 53 problem, issued an apology.
I think they're going to give people money back too, right? If they had to have a fix. And that's maybe what saves them from the lawsuit.
Yeah, so customers who paid... where did that go? Customers who paid for an out-of-warranty replacement of their device based on this issue should contact AppleCare about a reimbursement.
Yeah. See, so that'll probably save them from the lawsuit. If they weren't doing that, you could make a case, hey, you know, it was a bug, they denied it, they forced me to buy an out-of-warranty update, so I'm owed compensation.
Right, and that's totally reasonable, right? If they weren't offering a reimbursement. So it's a situation where like, yeah, it was a little bit inconvenient and good thing Apple gave you that credit line, that no interest credit line for a couple weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you want to go argue that you had some damages, so, you know, if you rely on your iPhone for work and you had it down for 10 days and you lost business you're going to have to prove that, you know, there was a financial loss that you're not being compensated for, and Apple has, and why I'm saying them admitting that it was a bug might help is you could say, hey, look, you know, but I don't know how the laws work when it comes to like a software bug.
Yeah.
Because if Apple didn't know, you know, it wasn't like it was intent or malicious that they were, you know,
well, the EULAs that we agree to pretty much indemnify Apple from any.
That would make
liability sense, over software bugs.
Yeah.
Yep. So
we'll see. Okay. So let's talk about the big thing this week. It wasn't Kanye, as it turns out.
It was Trump.
Well, yeah. I mean, it kind of was Trump. in some ways. But
that was the other crazy I was alluding to earlier.
Yeah, like, I know.
Were we going to move from the Kanye crazy to the Trump crazy?
I know. I know that's what you're talking about. So Apple this week was ordered by the FBI to help recover data from the San Bernardino's shooter's iPhone 5C. Hang on a sec. I gotta shoot a cat. Pew, pew, pew. Sorry. Yeah. So this was Tuesday. It came out that... So what the judge has asked Apple to do is three things.
No, not ask.
Okay, ordered.
This is a court order.
Yes, and so first one is to, let's see here. They need to disable the erase all content and settings after 10 tries, right? The second
after 10 passcode tries.
Correct. They need to ensure that the any sort of delay in entering passcodes would be disabled. And they need to provide a way for the FBI or Apple. I would imagine actually the FBI, because the idea is that the FBI wants to brute force hack the passcode.
Yes. Right.
So they're not asking Apple to...
You didn't finish off the third item,
okay,
though.
So yeah. So the third being they want them to provide a way through the Lightning connector, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, or some means of electronically entering passcodes.
Right. So they can automate the hacking process instead of having to enter potentially 10,000 passcodes.
On the screen.
Right on the screen.
Yes. Yeah. And this has caused a lot of debate and discussion.
Well, the order also defines how they want Apple to enable that stuff, which I think is important to the discussion.
Too, okay, right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we should make sure that this is fully fleshed out. So the idea is Apple needs to, in order to provide all of these functions for the FBI, Apple, of course, would need to create a special version of iOS.
This is mandated in the order. They're saying you need to create a special version of iOS.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That provides all these functions. And
it does specifically state that the version should only be able to be installed on the one device based on the device ID.
Right. Yes. Now, was it the same day Apple, Tim Cook wrote published a letter? Oh, no, it was the next day.
The next day. Mm-hmm.
The next day, he published a letter saying that this would create a, I believe the words were chilling precedent.
Yes.
And it seemed like this letter was almost locked and loaded, right? It came out pretty quickly.
Well, okay, so Apple knew this request was coming. And I believe Apple was hoping that the FBI would have this go down as a sealed request, meaning it would not be open to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And the FBI chose instead to do this as just a standard public court document. So I think Apple was prepared for the FBI to go public and was hoping they wouldn't, because this would have been probably a lot easier all the way around to address if this was done in the judge's chambers. But the FBI chose to take it public, and so Apple went ahead and jumped right in the middle of it and made sure that if it was going to be public, it was going to be very, very public.
Yeah. So why do you think – so you think that Apple would have preferred it to be a private matter?
Right, because then they could have sat down and said, look, here's the reasons why we can't do this, and here's the reasons why this isn't really going to be beneficial to you, and so let's continue to work, as we have been since January, on finding a way to get at data that you may think is useful, and do it in a way that doesn't compromise the security of anyone's device.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is more about getting the access than getting the data.
Yes.
I think the FBI really wants to set the precedent, as Tim Cook said.
Yeah.
And the data that they need is, honestly, I don't think the data that that they're looking for is going to be on that phone. This was a work issued phone. He, he worked for San Bernardino County, and he had a personal cell phone as well. Shortly before the shooting, he destroyed his personal cell phone.
He and his wife, there were two of them, and they destroyed both, I believe, phones.
Right, but they didn't do anything with their business phones.
Okay.
Okay, so let's put some logic on our train here.
And okay.
If you have a device that you know has information that could be used to incriminate you and other people and potentially lead government agents to the people that you have been conspiring with for committing terrorist acts inside the United States, what would you do? You would destroy that evidence.
Well, it's clear that they were aware of that thought process and took action upon it.
That's not even clear from statements the FBI has already made in the investigation. Because I was just reading today, they've already come out and said that they do not believe that these two were connected to any other terrorist.
Well, right. That, I mean, that yes, doesn't surprise me. It seems like they're just trying to set a precedent, and it's a fairly visible case.
Yeah, if you're going to set a precedent for forcing companies to intentionally weaken security measures on our devices, what better case to choose?
Absolutely. Yeah,
I want to back up there a little bit, though, too, because there's a little bit happening from both sides on this. And in that letter, Tim Cook used some language that really indicates that, to me, that Apple sees this as exactly what you're talking about. You know, the government wanting to sort of broaden access and set a precedent for what companies are required to do in helping inside these investigations. But he does use that language of backdoor.
Yes.
Okay? Yes, he does.
And so that is a completely separate sort of thing. And sort of what you were saying, Jeff, is this isn't a precedent. I think in this specific case, in this scenario, what's being described in the court order and the precedents that it would set would be that it would be the scenario of companies being forced to create special software for investigators to get in. And in this case, what they're looking for is not necessarily a backdoor. It is a weakening of the security measures that are in place so that they can hack it.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's not a
situation. They're asking Apple to create, to write the software that they need to enhance their forensic investigation capabilities.
Yeah.
Right. And I could see this, if this goes through and stands, that will certainly, as many people are pointing out, I think open the door for the government to continue to ask for this kind of request. But it's not them asking Apple to, you know, build an open backdoor that is installed on everybody's device right now today and, you know, allows government to get in through this backdoor. That's not what's being asked for in this case. Obviously, the concern is, from Apple's part, if we write this, it's going to get out somehow. I don't know how it would get out of Apple. And
it would get out.
That's not really clear to me.
Yeah. Well, okay.
See, again,
I don't
it's
know if
money.
Well, okay. So there's definitely a lot of there would be a lot of money on the table for something like that. Of course.
Also, once Apple has created this tool,
right,
then everyone knows the tool exists.
They can, yeah.
And if the United States government has already compelled Apple to create this tool and Apple has complied, Next up is China or Sweden or Germany or South Africa.
Right.
It doesn't matter who it is. Other governments are going to demand access to this tool.
Well, there are some things that
word backdoor is something that I'm having an issue with.
I agree with you. I think backdoor was used as an inflammatory term in this case.
Yeah.
And there could be other words that Tim may have chosen.
I
think he intentionally chose it because Apple's fighting a different battle about backdoors.
Right.
And one thing that I read that I think made sense is this is Tim and Apple kind of wanting to widen the term, at least from Apple's perspective, in terms of what is a backdoor.
That's precisely what he deliberately says that. He
right.
says, you know, the FBI may any use different words to describe this tool, but make more no mistake, building a version of iOS that bypasses security in this way would undeniably create a backdoor.
Right.
Now, the one thing that is fascinating to me, I think anybody you ask who deals with iOS stuff, who talks about it, reads about it, we all have the understanding that only software signed by Apple, actively signed, will load onto a phone. Now,
that's true for the operating system.
It's true for the operating system, and this is why the FBI is going to Apple, because they can't just make it themselves. And I think it's also interesting that Apple, you could say, has their own backdoor to iOS in some ways, because they are in possession of these keys allow them to put whatever version of iOS onto the devices that they want. I just want to put that out there. But what Tim Cook is saying, he says, and while the government may argue that its use would be limited to this case, there is no way to guarantee such control.
And that's absolutely true.
Now, okay, so what the government is saying, please create a version of iOS and only sign it for this one unique device, right?
Yeah.
Tim is saying we can't guarantee that that's going to work. And my question is...
What he's saying is the government can't guarantee they won't come back and say, okay, now sign it for a different device. Now sign it for this other device.
Yeah.
These other three here, sign it for them too.
Right. Right. And backing up just so, because I don't think we made this part clear about the court order. You know, two other elements of this court order that are very specific, and the court order is written very, very well. I think Apple's going to have
somewhat of
a difficulty actually fighting it because of how specific it is.
Yeah.
Two factors that they say that I don't hear a lot of people talking about, and I think are important to it as well, are one, that again, it would be, the software would be keyed to only be able to be installed on this one device. But more importantly, it also says that Apple can choose whether or not they write the software and give it to the FBI, or that the FBI sends the phone to Apple's facilities and Apple does all the work there. The only caveat is if Apple's doing the work, the FBI has to be able to have remote access to run their, you know, hacking software, obviously, against the device itself. So Apple has to make it available somehow remotely, or
yes,
I guess would allow agents to come into their facility and do what they want to do in Apple's own labs and things like that. So that's why to me, it seems like the thought that this software, this one specific version, would somehow get out, it seems very much in Apple's control.
Yes.
I don't know how many engineers it would take to write this. Oh, the other point is that I haven't heard is a lot of people are, well, then Apple has to use its engineering resources and talents and stuff like that. That's going to cost Apple money. It's also in the order that Apple can bill the FBI,
yes,
the
government, it is,
for whatever work. So
it
Apple
is,
will
yeah.
get compensated. If they're forced to do this, they will be compensated for the time and engineering efforts. And I can't even imagine what that bill will look like.
It's the bill... let's assume that this is upheld and Apple has to create the software and do all this work. The bill that Apple would present for their reasonable work is something that the government would balk at and say, we are not going to pay that.
Yeah.
And then there'd be a new legal battle about how much money should Apple actually get paid for doing all this work?
Yeah,
but again, I mean, in this specific order, you know, and just looking at this, and I am totally against any of the weakening of iOS security and encryption. I do not like this, just to be clear, you know, but I'm trying to play the part of, I want to make sure everybody has all the kind of correct information and understanding of this.
Well,
and why Apple may not win this battle, but really this isn't, they're drawing a line in the sand because this isn't really about this one battle, right? This is about a bigger war that's being waged on trying to get tech companies to open up the security and privacy of these systems for governments. And that is a real bigger concern.
And I think for the FBI and the Department of Justice, this is a much bigger battle than getting into this one iPhone.
This just happens to be
the platform that they could jump on. Yeah.
Well, and it's a good one because you have, I mean, you can point to, you can say, look, we're trying to catch terrorists. These are horrible, awful people that everybody hates. You know, nobody wants to see this sort of thing. So it's very easy to rally public support around a point like this. I think it's also why Apple chose to push back on this one issue for the same reasons.
Well, so it's, I guess it kind of comes down to, yes, I mean, it's traditionally tradition that if you're given a court order, if a company is given a court order to give over information, they are compelled to do it. Right. But in this situation, the court is trying to compel Apple into creating a tool, or maybe even more specifically, degrading the security of their system, of a particular system, sure. But they're effectively being asked to create a tool that will allow, that will assist the FBI in hacking the device. And the reason that we're having this discussion is that there is no precedent for this sort of situation, and it's, you got to wonder, you know, if it seems, it would be nice if this was
recent information too, though.
Yes, it does.
We haven't gotten to yet.
Okay. I want to get a little bit more information out then before we move on. So I've looked through, there's a document called, iOS Security Guide. You can find it. It's on Apple's website. It's, I believe, targeted at enterprise, but it's a great read. Skim through. The great read. Yeah, like The Martian. there are some interesting tidbits in here. And the most interesting to me is that for any device with an A7 or later, i.e. has a secure enclave, the rate limiting of password entries is enforced by the secure enclave, not by software.
Correct.
So if this were not a 5C, if this were a 5S, let's say, or a 6, the FBI wouldn't have any ground to stand upon.
That's inaccurate. Apple has come out publicly and said they could make this work, the same sort of hack work on a device with a secure enclave. So Apple has said this officially. So the initial thought was that the secure enclave had built into the hardware this password limiting. So just so people know what's going on with anything prior to the secure enclave, the way the rate limiting works is, I think it's a standard 5 seconds between attempts. So you can only do one password attempt every 5 seconds. So that severely slows down, if you're trying to brute force, how many times you can put it in. When Apple added the secure enclave, the secure enclave had a feature built into it where the rate limiting would progressively go up. So it would be like you could do a password and then it would be a 1 second delay. And then if you missed it, it would go to 2 to 5 to 10 to 50. You know, so it kept going up to the point where I think the max limited is it would be an hour between attempts.
Yes.
So when you get to attempt number 9, you have to wait an hour before you can try 10 and then brick the phone.
And so the thought was that that was built into the hardware of the secure enclave and unchangeable. But Apple has come out and said, no, it isn't. So now it's understood that they do have a way to update the software, firmware, I would assume, in the secure enclave to change those parameters. What's going to be interesting is, I think because of this case, because this is happening right now, it wouldn't surprise me that maybe not the iPhone 7, but maybe ones after that that have Secure Enclave, they may take this feature out and do exactly what you were talking about, Michael, where it would be a moot point, where these requests couldn't even be served because this type of request couldn't be served. And at that point, it really is going to become even more of a battle to have Apple be forced to build in a true backdoor.
Interesting. So where did they say this?
They gave a statement to, I don't remember which agency, but it was in defense of, you know, because a lot of people were saying, why won't they just do this one phone? It's a moot point because anything with Secure Enclave, this wouldn't work for. And Apple was responding to that, basically saying, oh, no. The same kind of thing that's being proposed we could do on devices with the Secure Enclave. Which is, again, why we're drawing, you know, this is another rationale for why are we drawing this line in the sand right now. And there's even more information now because of the whole DOJ jumping on board. That Apple's been able to come out publicly and talk a lot more about what's going on here and what's being asked for and why they don't want to comply.
Right. And then we have the fun new twist, which I think this all came out yesterday from all the information. Apple had been working very closely with the FBI ever since January to help recover all the data that they could, which they did. And then it turns out that the iCloud account password related to this phone had been changed within 24 hours after the phone went into law enforcement custody.
Yep.
And it turns out that it was actually a San Bernardino County IT employee that changed the password.
Yeah,
which presumably was done because he thought that would give them access to the account. But what he did was he broke the link between iCloud and the phone, and then that shut down Apple's ability to do anything else.
Yeah. So what happened is Apple's given them four different things to try, and I haven't heard all four. But what led up to this apparently was this information coming out is the DOJ. Is jumping and they're prepping a case to try and compel Apple to go along with this court order. And in those filings, a lot of details came out that Apple was previously not able to reveal, but because the DOJ filing made that information public, Apple can now talk about it. So what's been happening is they've been trying to get at the iCloud backups from this phone. And did we mention that this is a phone owned by San Bernardino County?
Yeah. Yes,
it's like their device. It's not this guy's personal device. So apparently it was doing iCloud backups and they stopped on, was it January?
The backups
9 weeks before.
Yeah, so it was like in October.
Right. So they have data and it was all unencrypted. So they have all the data from this device going up to like mid-October, something like that. Apple's solution was, well, if we can tell you how to force an iCloud backup to occur even on the locked device, we can make an iCloud backup happen, and then we can give you that data file when it gets up to iCloud, in essence. And so they sent Apple people to San Bernardino to this thing, and they were like trying to get it to work, and it wasn't working. This is what it sounds like to me from the reports. It didn't work, and then while they were trying to figure out why isn't this working, that's when it came out that this IT guy had reset the iCloud password.
Right. And there's talk going around that I don't know if this is accurate or not, that he changed the password at the request of the FBI. So we do know the password has changed. We don't know if he chose to do this himself or she chose to do it themselves or if it was an FBI request.
Right. But if they had not have done that, then they would not have needed this order to try and be able to hack the phone. The other thing that's interesting in this case is they do have like all the cell records. They have SMS messages from the device because all that stuff was going through the cellular networks. So it did come out that they have all of that data as well. So they have a large amount of data. And if really what they're trying to do is prove a connection between these guys and some other larger terrorist organization,
then they've already got that information.
Yeah, it's seeming like they should have more than enough data to understand if these people were working alone. And again, they came out and have already kind of said, we believe that there's no one else involved based on all the evidence we have so far. So it's really not clear what they're trying to get from this phone, what gap they're trying to fill in.
Yeah, we have no clue, actually, because, like you said, all the phone records, all of the text message interaction, all of that stuff is there. Now, if you're looking for specific conversations that would have been iPhone to iPhone, like with the other workers to show if yeah, they'd been conspiring with other people, then what you do is you go and look at the records on the other people's iPhones.
Yep.
Because they would be there as well. And yeah. I don't know if that's something that the FBI is doing or, I don't know.
It's just further evidence that sort of backs up Apple's case that this is really about setting precedents. And I think it's also in a larger scope, you know, from this is purely my opinion, but I think it's shared by a lot of people. I think in a larger scope, it's more about pushing the backdoor agenda that the government wants to push. Because if Apple's forced to give in on this one thing, it's going to weaken that, and they can kind of point to say, look, you know, this whole thing went down. We had to catch these terrorists. They complied in this. This helped us to do that. See why we need a backdoor here? Because then we're able to better do our job. But at that point, you know, that's the legislation, again, that I'm most concerned about, because that does weaken everybody's security.
Yeah.
Right. So, and keep in mind, we're talking about Apple right now, but you can replace Apple with any technology company's name.
Facebook, Google, Twitter. And they've all come out, those three companies at least, have effectively come out in support of what Apple is fighting against.
And then there's the whole argument that, you know, a lot of people will say, well, there's no evidence that, you know, this is what the government is going after. But I think there's a lot of historical evidence to show.
Sure.
Yeah. That, you know,
it's a political move.
Well, they say, you know, our government doesn't want to spy on everybody. Well, there's precedence.
They have been
for that.
Well, I mean, a lot of these agencies are charged with spying. I mean, that's their point of existing.
No,
they may not be trying to spy on everybody, but they want the power that they want to do their job as effectively as they can. And you know, if you talk to any random guy, any random officer in a police force that deals with phone related crimes, they're extremely frustrated by this stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I understand. It makes it much more difficult. But again, getting back to all the original arguments, just because these backdoors are put in place, ultimately, doesn't mean that the bad guys are going to be easier to catch. They will find other ways and other mechanisms to use encryption and to use other technologies, even if it's not built into the devices. So ultimately, it just weakens privacy and security for everybody, including law-abiding citizens. And I think most reasonable people in law enforcement, in governments and things like that, they understand this. And there's a lot of those people that are on the same side of this, right? So, mm-hmm. not everybody is bad. And I don't even think the people that are calling for this, you know, necessarily are bad guys. You know, everybody's just trying to find a solution. But I mean, ultimately, there isn't one other than going down the path that Apple's already going down, in my opinion. Mm. It's just like we have to protect everybody. And yes, unfortunately, that's going to mean some bad guys are going to get protected as well.
You know, I like the perspective that Michael Hayden, former CIA and former NSA director, said. And keep in mind, he was a bipartisan leader. He was appointed by a Democrat to run NSA, so that would be Bill Clinton, and then a Republican to run CIA, that would be George Bush. And he says that that doing anything to weaken encryption, while he gets why FBI Director James Comey wants to do this,
right,
he's misguided and it's wrong, because weakening encryption weakens the entire country.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there are tons of government employees, senators. People who have top secret information. iOS is used in those sectors because it's so secure.
Yeah, but again, if Apple weakened, it was forced to build a backdoor and weaken this, the government agencies, the ones that need to protect data, they have other mechanisms for doing that, and they know that. So they can still protect their messaging and spy on everybody else's.
Right.
So, and I guess we have to bring up Donald Trump. Because it's fun.
This is one of my favorite ones of this week.
It is fun. Donald Trump has been, his opinion on this was queried, I suppose.
Yeah.
And
I just offered it up. I don't know if he was asked. He tweeted.
Well, I think it had to do with the town hall they were doing with several of the Republican candidates. So it was Trump, Cruz, and Rubio. I don't know if Bush was there. I think it might have just been those three. But those are the three that weighed in on this. And, of course, we heard about Trump first because he's entertaining. And he said, who do they think they are? They need to open it up. They need to give the keys. They need to do this and that. Every single statement that he had given indicated that he did not understand what was going on, that he didn't understand the technical details of why or why not Apple could.
And of course, this is not surprising.
I don't think he cares, though.
He doesn't care. I think he.
The technical reasons are he just wants them to comply.
He wants them to comply, sure.
So do a lot of people, by the way.
Right. And thank you. A lot of people in government and elsewhere in the private sector, there are a lot of people who think Apple just needs to do it. They just need to comply with what the government has to say.
Well, they've been ordered to. So fairness, they have been ordered by a court to do this. And they have the right to appeal it, and that's what they'll do. But, I mean, many people just feel if you've been ordered by a court, it's been through the process of law, you should just comply. And I don't see that as necessarily an unreasonable thought for people to have.
For someone that doesn't understand how the legal process works, that's not an unreasonable thought. But to expect a company or a person to just roll over and blindly comply with something that is presented to them in a court order is not appropriate, because we have a legal process where we can contest what our government is telling us to do, and we have the right to do that. And Apple is totally right in contesting this and appealing, which is exactly what I think we will see happen next Friday, the 26th, because that's our deadline. Yeah, they should do this.
We got to get back to Trump.
Okay.
Yes.
And I agree with you, Jeff. I just want to throw out that, for people who are looking at these other people going, oh my God, I can't believe they're calling for this, it's not super unreasonable. I'm trying to stay as balanced as possible on this because things get crazy.
They do. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a crazy cluster.
This is something that there are a lot of people who, everybody is thinking about this.
So, yeah. So then Trump goes on to what?
To say that
boycott.
To call a boycott on Apple products.
Right. And so he sends out a tweet where he says that if Apple doesn't comply with the court order, that he's going to stop using Apple products and switch to a Samsung phone.
Yes.
All tweeted from an iPhone.
Sure. I mean, maybe he's in the process of boycotting it.
Well,
he said he carries both devices, but his primary device is currently an iPhone, and he'll just switch to the Samsung. But even more than the irony of that tweet going out, because it probably went out from a staffer anyway,
right.
On an iPhone.
Right. People like to pick on Trump as much as they possibly can, so it's not surprising that they're putting this out.
So, but the idea that he's going to switch to a phone from a non-American company when a big part of his platform is support for American companies. And not only that, American company who is simply exercising their rights and freedoms as an American company to fight this. That's where I find the irony in it. So as much as he might not like that Apple is doing that, the response that he's proposing seems totally counter to what I would expect his platform to be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he came up with it in the, you know, in the moment. If you watch the video of the town hall as he's addressing this question, he's like, I think we should boycott Apple. I just came up with this. And I truly believe he just came up with it.
Most of what he says, he is just coming up with as it pours out of his mouth. And he's just as surprised as we are to hear the words.
Yeah. Now, okay, so there's that. Now, my perception of typical politicians was that they didn't understand the intricacies of the issue, right? That was my perception.
I think some do and some
okay,
don't.
Okay, yeah, and now here's the thing. Cruz and Rubio both weighed in on this, and both of them had exceptionally good responses. They clearly know what's going on. They know what's at stake. And, you know, they have their opinions on it, but I think the takeaway is that they have a very good understanding of the idea that, you know, backdoors to, you know, encrypted data are a bad thing. They knew exactly what the FBI was asking for, and Trump obviously didn't. Now, there wasn't a town hall where Democrats were being asked this at the time, so it's unknown what, you know, Hillary Clinton thinks or Bernie Sanders thinks, but...
We certainly know what Dianne Feinstein thinks.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
She's one of the ones pushing for legislation to require companies to put in backdoors.
There's a lot of that stuff. So... I like that the Justice Department calls this a Apple stance a marketing strategy. Sure it is. Of course it's a marketing strategy. They want to it is in their best interest to provide the privacy that they are claiming is in their devices and to further that drive. That's what they want to do. So
It's also a bit disingenuous for them to say that, because the implication is Apple is using this as a PR stunt. Apple can find a lot better ways to conduct a PR stunt than engaging in a legal fight that is going to go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, that's what I'm expecting.
Can I ask you guys about one other thing that came out? I want to say this came out yesterday, so I'm just getting this information now. So one of the things that has been talked about is, you know, like eventually if this goes through and Apple doesn't comply, you know, someone's going to get punished or go to jail or something is going to happen. But I think it was the Wall Street Journal reported that the U.S. Senate has now said that they are not going to criminalize companies if they don't comply with
I have not heard this
deciphering messages or something like that. Again, I don't know how this has bearing or where this comes into play. I think it's just something that was even proposed, so I don't even know if it's clear, but there was a proposal that was going to seek to apply civil penalties to punish tech companies who refuse to comply with encryption-related court orders. But apparently they're reporting now that I guess it's coming from the Senate Intelligence Committee. Their chairman, Richard Burr, they've been drafting this proposal, but he says they're not going to go forward with that part of the proposal. So
that's
I don't think this is law yet, but it has interesting implications, because my whole thought was if this goes all the way to Supreme Court and then Apple still refuses to comply, that there would be some sort of penalties applied. But it's sounding like that might not even be the case. And I heard at least one story sort of throw out that this may be a reason why Tim Cook is willing to risk drawing the line in the sand on this one issue, because it's sounding like there may or may not be any ultimate penalties, even if Apple continues to not comply.
Yeah, you mean even beyond a Supreme Court order?
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. So I don't, I think this is still forming. Again, it just came out yesterday. I'm just hearing about it this morning. But it was an article in the Wall Street Journal. And yeah, if you want to research it, it's basically look up Richard Burr, Senate Intelligence Committee, and encryption rules for tech companies.
Hmm. If you look up Raymond Burr, you'll see a very different solution to this problem.
Okay. Apple sold a bunch of...
There's an op-ed in USA Today. Sorry, I'll give you the link. Okay. Michael, I think this comes out of an opinion piece from Burr that was written for USA Today where he was calling out Apple to... He basically wants Apple to comply, but I think it's where it came out where he said there wouldn't be these criminal penalties or they're not pursuing putting that part into the proposal.
Hmm.
So.
Okay, yeah, you sent that to me. So all right.
Maybe you can throw that in the show notes for people.
I definitely will. Okay. Apple sold 5.1 million Apple Watches.
Apple Watches
in the holiday quarter. 5.1. That's pretty good. And
whose number is that?
It's strategy,
not Apple's number.
Strategy analytics.
Okay. Strategy analytics number.
Thank you. And what is the total that they believe? I thought that was in here. So 13.6 million overall in 2015.
What's interesting to me about that number is it seems like that's the number, around the number we keep getting quarter after quarter since the launch of the Apple Watch. I'm serious. What's interesting to me about that number is it seems to be about 5 million units per quarter. And I'm only pointing that out to point out if that is accurate, that means that Apple Watch sales are going consistently quarter to quarter and they're not seeing any kind of slowdown.
Oh, yeah.
In the
and
unit.
That is number. Interesting.
That is yeah. interesting.
So that's all. I mean, and they do seem to add up because you're saying a total of how many Apple Watches?
13.6.
13.6.
Yep.
What I would think the number would be higher because hasn't it been on sale for about three quarters now?
Maybe 2.5. April? Yeah, it's about three.
Yes. Yeah, so three quarters.
Yeah.
So you'd expect it to be somewhere around 13 to 15 million. So that sounds about right.
Yeah, cool. So Apple has. Where is this?
Well, and Strategy Analytics also said that's 68% market share. Smartwatch.
That's pretty impressive.
For Apple. I think. That same report.
It is. I see a lot of
it. Yeah, the figures that I see, depending on which firm you look to, fluctuate between like about 65 and 75% of the market. It's all Apple.
I'll tell you just, out in the wild, I see a lot of Apple Watches.
I do too.
So do I.
I was at the I was in the parts department at the Volkswagen dealership yesterday, and one of the guys in the back room even has one. I was just pretty surprised. Like, even like a car guy has one of those.
My car mechanic has one.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Honestly, when I work on my car, I like having the watch as long as I don't damage it. It's really handy because if you're up in the gully works, it's hard to get to your phone. And if it rings or you get a text message, you want to be notified of that stuff. And you can just look at your wrist and that's just super nice. So.
Yeah.
There's a new trade up program, trade up with installments that Apple's offering. I don't know how I feel about it exactly.
For what kind of devices, Michael?
All sorts of devices, Jeff.
Do tell.
Yeah. So if you want to, you can use your old device, your old iPhone, Android phone, use that value toward a new phone on the installment plan, the 24-month installment plan, which I thought they already did. But I guess that was only for iPhones on the installment plan. So when you get the installment plan
already,
and you trade it in to get the next one. So now you can actually use the value of the device. And it's weird because they specifically say that even if you have, there's no difference in value between the 16 gig device or an 8 gig device and a 128 gig device, you'll still get $200. And I'm like, that's not a good deal for people who spend a butt ton of money on a 128 gig device.
Yeah, that's how Apple's always rolled it, though.
Yeah.
They charge us for all the storage. They charge us crazy amounts of money, and then they just ignore the fact that we spend all that money.
Think of it as a convenience fee, because you can go into an Apple store, hand over your old iPad, get some credit, buy a new one, and walk out with all your data on your new device, good to go.
Yeah, that is nice.
To be fair, it works the other way, though, too. I benefited the other way with the out-of-warranty service replacement program.
Okay.
They don't charge you any different if you have a 16 gigabyte or a 128 gigabyte device. You pay the same replacement cost.
That is nice.
Well, unless you have the 16 gig and then you're like, I'm getting hosed.
Well, everybody gets hosed.
Right. So I'm just saying, it's just Apple's general policy is to have that kind of one price point deal. It sounds like both ways, whether you're paying to buy a new device or whether they're giving you credit to get a new device. So, yeah. Or replacing an out-of-warranty device, I mean.
Yeah. Okay, so picks. Jeff, I'll let you go first, Jeff.
Okay. After such a heavy, deep episode, we need something fun. So go watch the new OK Go video.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's awesome. It doesn't matter what the words are or the lyrics are. It's just incredibly fun to watch. What they did was they filmed the entire video in a vomit comet.
Yeah.
And
a pretty nice looking one.
That are like, I don't want to watch that.
Well, there's no vomiting.
There's no vomiting. It's a big airplane that you take up pretty high, and then you start doing like fast dives, and then you come back up and fast dives and come back up.
I think they call them like parabolic drops, right?
Parabolic flight. Yeah, the idea is that your plane is dropping at the same rate as gravity is pulling you. So the net effect is zero.
Weightlessness.
Yes.
And so they do this video where they are weightless, and it is just loads of fun.
It is.
All of their videos are great.
They are.
They always do these creative sort of things. And I always wonder how they're going to top like the last one that they just did. Like they did the Rube Goldberg one.
Oh, that was awesome.
This one where they were all riding around on like these little monoped kind of scooter things. The original one was the treadmill one.
Yep.
Right?
The treadmill was pretty good.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and now they've got weightlessness. So like, what's their next thing?
They have to go to Mars, I think.
On the moon? Yeah, I mean, like, how do you top?
Like doing push-ups on the moon or something.
Yeah, I have no idea. Yeah, it's cool. It's a cool video. I love all their videos.
It's fascinating because typically these planes that do the parabolic flights can really only do about 30-second dives. So if you watch closely, you can see there are points where they're told, you know, hold your position. We got to reset, and we're going to fast forward through this part. And so it's very well choreographed.
I don't even know if they do that, do they? Because
I don't think
there's
fast
a lot
forward.
Of objects in the video. I think what you see is you can see when they're actually under gravity and then when it goes zero G again.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a mix. So there are some parts where they're under gravity.
I was looking for the edit points, though.
Yeah, they're not in a weightless environment through the entire video.
Yes.
Looks like it's all a one shot.
They did it as one shot, but it took 8 tries. And,
oh, God.
Oh, yeah, they really wrecked the inside of this little set here at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You imagine resetting that? And they used it's a Russian company, right?
Is it?
That provided the plane?
Yes.
Oh, so did they use like
an
Antonov or something? Yeah, and for what it's worth, I'm sure that the interior of this set is totally a set.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely is. Because it's made to look like a commercial plane, but obviously those things are totally empty and padded.
Right. And so, yeah, so they slide their fuselage set inside the real fuselage.
But yeah, it's really cool.
And a pretty good indicator that they are on a set inside the airplane, you never see the light change through the windows.
Yeah.
Which is fine because it doesn't need to. They just need to have.
I don't even know if those planes have set. Windows.
I think they do. They're basically gutted commercial planes usually.
Right. Yeah. Everyone I've ever seen where they're doing astronaut testing seems to be fully padded on the inside.
Well, that'd like be a good idea to walls. Have a padded, yeah. Okay.
It's just like a giant padded room.
Oh, they're probably just padding over the windows.
Yeah. Okay. So, Adam.
Yes.
What's your pick?
So, my pick comes about, I got a tweet from Grant Pachoco, actually, who did the original Dr. Floyd podcast. If you've never heard that, you should probably check that out. He's actually a puppeteer, and I think he works a lot with Jim Henson Studios.
Oh, okay.
But he brought up something and asked me a question about something that I've run into myself. So you're out and about, you've left the house for the day, maybe getting around lunchtime, you're getting hungry, and you go, I want to get some food, but I left my wallet at home. And I have no cash, and I have no cards, I have no way to get cash from an ATM.
But I have my iPhone.
Yeah. And the question becomes, where can I use my Apple Pay? And he's like, can I figure out how to use my Apple Pay? And my first thought was, Apple Maps, I think, has some integration now where it'll show you if you're looking up a place, like if you know the name of the place, if it takes Apple Pay or not. And I think that's enabled through the Yelp integration. I'm not positive.
Mm.
So I first tried that and I'm like, oh, this is impossible. I can't figure out, where is a place near me that takes Apple Pay that I can go get some food at. So then I thought, well, there must be an app or a service at this point. And I found something called Payfinders, payfinders.com, and they have an app. And it is an app that uses data from a bunch of different sources, I think, including being crowdsourced. And it will show you a map and a radius of 1, 6, or 12 miles from where you are. And then it will show you all of the places where Apple Pay is accepted.
Cool.
And not only that, you can rate the experience as well as a Payfinders user. So you can go in, and so it's not only do they take Apple Pay, but, are they promoting it? Is it working? Did I have a good experience or a bad experience overall? So you can kind of rate how well the retailer is doing and give some feedback. And you can also, of course, add, because it's crowdsourced, if you go to a place that's not listed as taking Apple Pay, and it does, or vice versa, you can change the data and you can actually submit the data.
Cool. Yeah, there's a
lot of places within a mile of me that are taking Apple Pay now.
That's pretty awesome. I was at the donut shop the other day, and I saw that they upgraded to the new Square unit, the new Square system. And so I was like, can I do Apple Pay? And they're like, I don't think it works. And I'm like, I think it does. I think that thing does have Apple Pay on it. Do you mind if I try? And they're like, oh yeah, totally. And they were like blown away. They're like, we didn't even know that we could do that.
Yeah. So again, that's where this app comes into play, because you, Michael, if you were using this app, you could go in and say, yeah, they take Apple Pay and it was a good experience, and you can make comments and all that sort of stuff. So right now it's only in the US, I think, but they're going to be expanding it to the UK and some other areas, they say, soon.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the style. I like how they've done the overlay. It's just kind of this black and white, very simple line UI to it. And they overlay the little things on the Apple Maps, and it works well. Now, I just found out about
it. It's missing stuff, though.
Like missing places that take Apple Pay?
Yeah.
Well, again, you can add to it, though. So I think it's kind of the thing where a lot of the data is more on the ground, crowdsourced.
So I need to set up an account.
Yeah, so you do need to, you create a free account. The app is free, and you can go in and you can add a place. So if you go somewhere and one doesn't exist. And when I pop mine open, all the major retailers that are near me, I think they've kind of built in that data. So if you've got a McDonald's or you've got Petco or some of those other places that are known to take Apple Pay, I think those are all on there right out of the box.
Ah.
It's going to be more of like the donut shop, like you're mentioning, Michael, that, may or may not be listed on there.
Yeah.
But hopefully people start to add more data. And as more people use this, I think it's going to get better and better. It's really something that Apple should have built, and I don't know why they haven't yet. But hey, use this. It seems, it's like I said, I haven't used it out in the wild yet, but when I popped it open, it did have all of the areas near me that I've known do take Apple Pay, like the Walgreens and those sorts of places, McDonald's and vice versa. So it seems like it would work well for people.
This is really cool.
Yeah, I'm going to be playing with it. Okay, so my pick is a tiny game of Pong.
Oh, I saw this. Have you actually played it?
I have. Does it work? Oh, yeah, it's great. Yeah, so I have, there are situations that I'm sure everybody has throughout the day where they're just, they're expected to sit there or stand there and you just have to, you know, wait for something to happen. And sometimes you pull out your phone and idly like swipe through things or read random things. But sometimes it doesn't make any sense and you want to just play a little game for a couple seconds, whatever. And this is perfect for that. So it works. It's targeted for your watch. So you download it to your phone, of course, and it's $1. I think it was free when I got it.
Is it a native watch app? I hope.
Yeah, it has to be. I don't think you could make it non-native. And it seems to work pretty well. So, so it's 99 cents, and it's Pong on your Apple Watch.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah. It's slightly glitchy, a little bit glitchy, a little laggy, but I mean,
please tell me you control the paddle with the digital crown.
Of course you do.
Oh, good.
Of course you do. Yeah, it's lots of fun, and the computer is pretty good at
obviously it's only against back. The computer though.
Yeah, but the computer is pretty good.
Be cool if they could sync like two Apple Watches.
Maybe.
Like, here, I don't even know if it's technically possible.
And then you could
possible.
Play against someone.
Yeah.
Classic game modes. Yeah, so maybe I should just pay 99.
I don't even know if that would technically be possible, but it would be cool if it was.
Yeah, I'm giving them some money for this. Get different. I don't know what the classic game modes. Classic.
Now, would that be in-app purchase in addition to the 99 cents, or are you only having to pay to upgrade?
I don't know.
So the app itself is 99, and it looks like then there's a classic upgrade for 99 cents, so it could end up costing you about $2.
It was free when I got it, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it's 99 cents now. It was a
promotion.
Yeah, a launch promotion. I think $2 is fine if it's a good app.
Oh, here we go. Classic mode. What the heck is the difference between classic mode and... Oh, is it just like the paddle? The computer's less good? Classic. He's stupid. I don't know. Whatever. It's cool. $1 will get you Pong on your Apple Watch. And that's pretty sweet. So, a tiny game of Pong. $1. A tiny game of Pong. There we go. What was your pick, Adam?
Payfinders. I put the link in the chat.
Boom. Okay.
Payfinders.com. Payfinders is the app.
Cool. So it's in the show notes as well. So, as always, the picks in the show notes are at theiosshow.com. Review the show in iTunes. We love that. Your ratings are also awesome. Tell a friend about the show if you know someone who would enjoy the show. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the address to which you can send all of your feedback, questions, comments, all that stuff. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the Mattcast, mattcast.com, and at Mattcast on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It was a long show today. We screwed around a lot beforehand, too, talking about nonsense. But that's fine. Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, and the TMO Daily Observations podcast is on every weekday. Check that show out. And there's a lot more discussion of the Apple FBI stuff. You think you did, what, 2 or 3 shows on that?
Let's see. Yeah, three episodes of the iOS show and one episode of Apple Context Machine.
You mean the other show?
The other show.
TMI Daily Observations, not iOS show.
So many shows, I can't keep them straight. Yes, Daily Observations, I did three. And then Apple Context Machine, another one.
And you did one on Kanye too, right?
there's an article up on TMO on Kanye.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing is this isn't over. I mean, there's going to be a lot more of this stuff. This is going to be ongoing for a couple weeks, I think.
Maybe months. It's probably going to go to Supreme Court.
Well, it'll from our perspective, it'll be between court rulings. There won't be much going on.
Right, yeah. Okay. So, at Jay Gamet on Twitter, I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And, yeah, with that, we'll see you next time on The iOS Show.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this?
A stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.
Yuck.
No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them.
Yuck.
Stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus.